You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. The following program may contain adult themes, discussion, and content that some people may find offensive. If you consider yourself likely to be offended, then perhaps you'd like to tune to another frequency for the next hour. If you have any feedback or would like to see information about our other shows, please go online to radioreverb.com.
Hey, hello.
Good evening, Josh. Lovely to see you.
And I see you, David. Hello to our listeners.
Yes,
on the HRV
welcome
hour.
All.
Yes,
yeah.
it's that time again.
Yep.
We're here.
It's Thursday.
Yes, it's Thursday.
6th of June.
Yes, 7 p.m. And we're ready to go.
We are.
Yeah, everyone else, Sue and that are on other things, unfortunately, but they obviously... send their love and stuff.
So, they do, yes.
How are you, David?
I'm good, yeah. I've just had a new sofa delivered. It's one of those sort of few times in your life where you have, you know, it's like, well, I don't know how many sofas you have in your lifetime, do you?
I thought you were sitting funny.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's a recliner. I press a button and my legs go up in the air.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Bounce it out.
Yeah, restful. You know,
it's a bit
restful,
too early for that
restful
kind of
way.
Nonsense.
Yeah.
It's a bit
yeah.
too early for that kind of nonsense on this kind
it's
of show.
Before the watershed, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. No, but it's a recliner sofa and it's lovely. The cats are a bit scared of it because it makes a little noise and anyway, it stops them from scratching it because otherwise it'll be a very expensive scratching post.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's a difficult one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I did see them, didn't I? Because you picked me up this evening and oh, it was nice. It was very luxurious.
Soft and pumptuous.
Yes.
Sofa's lovely too.
Yeah. So welcome to the HRV Hour, 97.2 FM, RadioReverb.com. We're here, we've got a few things on this today, aren't we?
We have got some great music with a 1990s theme.
Kind of a classic kind of thing. So.
Because last weekend was a bank holiday in Brighton, the UK, and it was they had a noughties and 90s,
Nineties
and noughties festival at East Brighton Park. And I didn't go this year, but I went last year and saw Alice in Limerick perform Where Love Lives.
That's a classic 90s, isn't it?
Classic tune. And she was like, there were people there that weren't born when she first had that hit. And she was like, you know, she's like grandmother now. But still rocking out the tunes.
Rocking out the beat.
Yeah, she was. But by all accounts, it was a great time this year as well. The weather was nice for them. It was good.
Yes. Mm. So that's what we need. We need some decent weather, I think. So it's like been a bit wet.
It's June, it should be. Summer started, meteorologically speaking.
Yeah,
it's a big word. It's
a big word. Too big. That.
Yeah.
So what we've got on the show. So
go on. We have.
I'll let you say it.
So we have Philip has done a wonderful interview with the actor Nathaniel J. Hall, who most listeners will remember was one of the lead characters in It's a Sin.
Yes, he's been on the show before. Actually,
he has. Yes. I think Stephen's interviewed him as well. So,
he did,
as well as Philip.
Yeah.
So he's great. So it's part one of that interview. And we'll play part two of another edition. And then we have some stories from around the world and the UK as well. And then we have some great community news. And obviously with the theme of HIV running through all of that with a background to 90s tunes.
Yeah, there's quite a few, there's lots of stories, isn't there?
Yeah, lots going on in the world. And you know, it's obviously we're gearing up to World Zero HIV Stigma Day. And there's lots of new developments in science and... Yeah.
Also, I mean, the thing about the because we only do a couple of hours a month, don't we? The thing with the story with the affected blood scandal. So that's kind of things we're.
So that's been a major story in the UK. Well, actually, it's been a global story.
Yes,
because it is obviously involved in the United States as well. But we have got an interview coming up with somebody that was directly affected by that.
Yeah, that's another. That's like lit. I think isn't the government doing a response or something
in July? Yes,
kind of waiting for
the inquiry report, which the inquiry that Theresa May, Prime Minister at the time, ordered. But it's shocking that 30. I didn't realise 30,000 people were affected by this.
A lot of people, wasn't it? Yeah,
and a significant number of those, and I think nearly 10% have passed away. I think two people a week are dying that were affected by the infected blood scandal. It's criminal what happened, but I don't want to talk about it too much today.
No, it's just not, to say that we're on the
I was aware of it at the time, but it's not my story to tell, and I think it would be much better spoken by the interview guest that we have
absolutely
coming up.
So we'll let you know about when that's coming on. So
yes.
Should we get on with the show?
Let's do.
So we'll come back with Philip's interview with Nathaniel after amazing 90s.
This is one of my favourite tunes. Yeah.
Enjoy the Silence by Depeche Mode.
Welcome to the HIV Hour, Nathaniel J. Hall. I feel like you need no introduction, but I'm going to give it a stab anyway. So you are a freelance theatre maker, writer, performer, director, producer, and a HIV activist, and now a documentary filmmaker. How are you today?
I'm great, thank you. That's quite the list, isn't it? I always say master, jack of all trades, master of none. Put my finger in any pie and see what sticks. That sounds rude, didn't it? I shouldn't have said that.
Exactly. But before I do want to find out why you got on board with this documentary, but we are talking specifically, it's a new documentary called Bug Chasers, The Men Who Want HIV. And this is part of Channel 4's documentary series on their YouTube channel. Now, first of all, I didn't even realise Channel 4 offered this on a YouTube channel. How did it come about and how did you get involved in it?
Yeah, well, I've known about bug chasing for a while. I mean, first off, we should say right at the start here, bug chasing, which is people who fetishize or fantasize about contracting HIV or passing it on to others, represents a tiny, tiny minority of people, like a minority within a minority within a minority. So it doesn't pose any significant risk to kind of public health, and it's not something people should be generally worried about. But it's a phenomenon. I've lived with HIV for 20 years, and it's a phenomenon that I've known about for a long time. And I think most, particularly gay and bisexual men living with HIV, will probably be aware of it. They will have maybe been asked. I've been asked a number of times to gift my HIV to someone, which is a sort of slightly surreal and strange experience to be asked that. And I think there's always these myths abound, isn't there? Like about sort of these bug chasing parties or Russian roulette parties. You know, I know a friend of a friend who got HIV because they went to a Russian roulette party, which is, you know, where apparently one person is HIV positive, or where there are these gifting parties where people are, you sort of like, it's celebrated as someone is given HIV. And I sort of was going, I wanted to know whether it was just urban myth, because there's plenty of urban myths out there, right? Or whether it was really happening. And so I wanted to go out and kind of find out if it was happening, and if it was happening in real life and not just fantasy or urban myth, you know, who was doing it and why, and try and kind of dig under the skin of it. So that's really how it came about.
So you approached Channel 4 with the idea.
Actually, the stars aligned, and the production company that made it came to me and said they were looking to make something about HIV, and we started a conversation, and that's where it went from.
That's brilliant. And obviously, it is a remarkable documentary. Obviously, anybody, it is free to watch on YouTube, which is brilliant again. But you seem to visibly struggle while making it with the impact it had on you. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, well, it's definitely an immersive documentary in every sense of the word. And it's only a 20-minute short doc, so you don't really get to see the level of immersion that I had for about 3 or 4 weeks. I really threw myself into this world, and I set up profiles to try and meet people, to try and speak to people, to try and sort of get into the networks and groups where this sort of things were taking place and find out more. You know, some of it's very open. You can quite easily find it on hookup apps like Grindr or another kind of dating apps. You can find it quite easily on Twitter, actually X, formerly known as Twitter. So it's the only thing we're allowed to dead name, isn't it? Get away with it, we call it Twitter. But also on Telegram, which is a little bit like WhatsApp, but totally like unregulated. It's a bit like the dark web, so sort of anything goes on Telegram. And there are some groups on there that I managed to get invites into, which were quite dark, and there was quite a lot of extreme BDSM and sexual fetish taking place in those, and what also looked like self-harm. And a lot of drug taking as well. So there was sort of throwing myself into that world and seeing these images and seeing this kind of the way people were talking to one another, and was quite heavy. And you don't really see any of that in the documentary because there's no time to show it. But some of the stuff I saw, and it's not to say that this is directly connected to bug chasing, but there is overlap in these worlds, was quite upsetting. And there was, like I say, there was what felt like a lot of, at times, people stuck with drug addiction or struggling with drug addiction, you know, with self-harm, harming each other, sort of collective self-harm, and sexual practices that felt yeah, quite difficult to watch. And talking to some people, and again, not everyone, but talking to some people who very much recognised that they were in need of help, you know, and yeah. So it was a challenging one to make. And also, obviously, given the subject matter, and the difficult line I walked, and it's the first documentary I've ever made, is that actually I didn't just turn up as a journalist. You know, I turned up as a HIV activist, so I'm an educator in a sense, and I have a mission, which is to end new transmissions of HIV by 2030. You know, that's my goal in the work that I do. But I'm also HIV positive, and I come with all that bias as well. And so I had to really, really work hard to try and be aware of my bias, not switch it off, but be aware of it and try and understand, because that's the whole point, right? And try and understand rather than immediately jump to conclusions or judge. So yeah, it was a tough whole few weeks filming it.
But I imagine with that came an understanding and an empathy and an insight. You could perhaps not necessarily agree with what you discovered, but you could certainly relate to an extent with some of it. That's how I felt. I have an experience with chemsex, so a lot of it I recognised. Let's delve into it. So there's a two groups, isn't there? Two fractions, the chasers and the gifters. So yeah, tell us a little bit more. Obviously, you can watch the documentary for full understanding, but essentially you have the chasers who are the ones seeking HIV.
Yeah.
And there's, as you said, there's various reasons why these people do this, whether it comes down to mental health or whether it's a fetish. Have you come away, having met some, have you got a deeper understanding, a more acceptance of it, or not acceptance? I don't know how you describe it.
Well, I think one of the things, I can't remember which sexologist said it, but you know, quite a famous quote in the world of sexology is that if you can think it, someone's doing it. So the spectrum of human sexuality and sexual fetish is extremely broad. And obviously that then, we know, sweeps into territory that becomes grey and then into territory which is unethical, you know, where we go, absolutely, that is a red line, you know, when we look at sexual practices that harm other people or harm people, you know, or we look at paedophilia or something like that. But this is not in that bracket at all, because there's people who are doing this consensually, you know, so there is a consensual act taking place between adults. But I guess what did I learn about it? Well, really, I think the more you talk to people involved in it, the more you realise that potentially there is actually, within the small minority of people who are engaged online, the actual number of people doing it in real life, it diminishes again. And there is a lot of people who are fantasising. And actually, in the documentary, I speak to a researcher called Dr. Jaime Garcia Iglesias, who is actually, I think, has written one of the only papers from a European perspective on the phenomenon. And, you know, he said very much from his research that the longer you talk to people, the more you go, this story doesn't quite add up in parts. And so you're not quite sure, and it destabilizes, and you go, maybe there is a... And his sort of conclusion is that actually, online, people are authoring together, creating a story and mass fantasy that is around this, and the thrill comes from the increased level of risk involved. So as you heighten that risk, you heighten sexual pleasure. So talking about this to other people online becomes sexually pleasurable. And he said his research didn't. So he didn't find any evidence that people were engaged in real life. Now, my experience is different to that. I have met people both through the documentary and outside of the documentary. I have absolutely no doubt that what they're telling me is the truth. So I think it does happen in real life as well. But I think the reasons are so broad and varied from person to person. I didn't really find one concrete reason. And I found some people who I interviewed who actually didn't make the cut of the documentary. One person who had the fetish but didn't want it, so was sort of going, I don't want to enact this out in real life. I am taking PrEP. it's a fantasy, and it's actually something that I dislike about myself. Whereas I met other people who were the total opposite, who were like, we see one in the documentary, you know, he's out loud and proud and tell everyone knows about it, and doesn't seem to have any, on the surface, residual shame or anything about that. So, and everything in between. And, you know, people who say they want to get HIV because it's life with HIV is easier. There are people who say that they feel that they want to be connected to a community or a brotherhood or connected to their past, to the community's past. So there's a kind of becoming HIV positive is seen as a gift. You become part of this community. And that's a difficult one, because at first I go, that's very strange. But then I go, well, I've lived with HIV for 20 years and I found an amazing community through that. So it's very hypocritical of me to turn around and go, well, you're not allowed to find the community that I found, you know. So, but then on the flip side, I'm like, but I also don't want you to get an incurable illness, because let's face facts, although it's treatable, it's for life and it's a life-changing diagnosis as well. So, yeah, it kind of throws up, the more you delve into it, it throws up more kind of moral and ethical dilemmas.
Exactly. And almost kind of normalizes it to an extent. And you talked about earlier that, like, yes, it is a very small community of people at the moment, but there is that concern that it is a snowball effect, and that if it continues to grow, even as on a fantasy level, it will then eventually knock onto the more real life cases. So that is why it needs to, I agree with you, needs to be kind of addressed or certainly looked at. And certainly where people need help, they get it. I think within that, with the things that I related to, were my personal experience of contracting HIV. I knew about HIV. I was diagnosed 8 years ago while I was involved in chemsex, and I didn't use protection. I didn't take PrEP, even though by that point in the timeline, it was available. I could have taken it. And I look back, and it is possibly one of my biggest regrets that I didn't. But it was down to self-worth. I remember not feeling like I deserved to be here. So it's a shame when you look reflectively on things like that. And like I say, I took those risks because it was no longer a death sentence. I think if it were, I would have taken more care. I should certainly would have had more respect for myself. But these are all things that you learn with time.
Mm, yeah. Well, just go back to what you just said there about, you know, self-worth and kind of understanding maybe the gravity of a diagnosis and stuff. This book chasing is not a new phenomenon. And there's a film on YouTube from 2003, which is the year I was diagnosed. We're going to have very different landscape than HIV, you know, about 6 or 7 years from effective medication, called The Gift. And it's a little bit sensationalist, and it's very American in its construction and stuff, but that follows someone who essentially has fallen into this world and then become HIV positive and regrets it. But going back even further than that, there is, you know, documentation of a subculture, a community of people intentionally getting HIV. And I actually spoke in the documentary to the person in America who is sort of coined as the first person to speak publicly about it, sort of the original chaser, the original kind of bug chaser. And he didn't, again, it didn't make the cut. He used to be a porn star and a sort of party, a sex party host in America. And, you know, people talk about getting HIV on their own terms. And there's a very fatalist, at that point, a very fatalist standpoint where people go, I know it's a death sentence, but I can't relax when I'm having sex. And again, you start to, I'm not a trained psychotherapist or psychologist, but you start to unpick and go, well, what is going on there for someone to go that my life is like that, I would put myself, my life on the line for this sexual pleasure, in a sense. And, you know, he talks about very much knowing that when he could contract HIV, that he was going to die. He actually didn't, because effective medication came in a few years later. So in a sense, he was very lucky.
Yeah, I absolutely do remember when there was an anxiety around catching HIV before I did, where I would go and get tested regularly, sexual health screenings. and you always worried that one day you were going to catch it. And there was, bizarrely, a sense of relief when I did catch it, because it was then controllable. It meant that I was able to then take control of it, and I wouldn't be able to pass it on because I would take medication and be undetectable. So there was a kind of relief that you're no longer kind of running from this virus, that you've actually kind of tackled it head on. But it is such a weird dynamic. But this is where I feel the protection needs to come in. And there's a level of responsibility and accountability for the gifters. Because although they feel that it is consensual, we can delve into that now. Because what were your take on the gifters when you met them? And did you agree to an extent with what they were doing, or did you still oppose it?
In terms of the gifters, where do I sit on that? I mean, the person I meet in the documentary, who describes himself as an ethical gift giver, so he very much speaks to people at length before, so they understand. He certainly wouldn't do this on a whim. He said to me that he had gifted successfully to a number of people. Again, is it fantasy? Like, was I part of his fantasy? Was it part of his fantasy coming on the documentary, you know, to kind of have that status within this subculture, with us in the community? You know, how much of what is being said is real and what is not is all up for grabs again. But, you know, I guess if you take people at face value and what they're saying, then, you know, I guess I don't have any reason to doubt him that he gave me in any way, shape or form. So it's a tough one, because people live with HIV, we all have that person that gave it to us, whether we know who that person is or not. And I guess we probably all also, particularly people like myself who've lived with HIV for a long time, live for a long time with the fear of passing it on. Now we have U equals U from about, you know, what, 2017, 2018. That science was not around before then. And so very much you're living with the fear of passing it on. And I also was diagnosed in the era before you were put onto medication straight away. So I had 5 years unmedicated. So even more so feeling like a ticking time bomb, you know, I was talking about like having sex, I felt like having a grenade in my hand. And so I know what I would feel like, how devastated I would be. And I think most people living with HIV would be so devastated if they passed it on to someone else. Because despite the fact that it is treatable and it's one tablet a day, and for the most part, you know, we get on with our lives, I think people living with HIV, most of us have lived with the mental and psychological impact of that diagnosis, rightly or wrongly, around the HIV stigma, the shame, the linking to hard for me to meet someone who then and try and understand from their experience. And imagine a world where we go, this is just a virus, in the way that chlamydia is just about, sort of go, okay, yeah, maybe, right? So if the reason it's given them sexual thrill is because it is seen as subversive, because it goes at things that we get often. And so this is seen as a subversive act. This is seen as a dangerous act, a risky act, and it's done. But I guess as I try and conclude in the documentary, you know, we've lived with 40, born in the late 70s into the 80s, like me, in the 90s. We've lived with it. Like, it is part of our world. We have no other frame of reference, and it has impacted us in many, many different ways. And I think some people, like I say at the end of the documentary, some people go to therapy.
HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
Good evening. You're listening to HIV Hour on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM and DAB Plus Radio. That was Passion by Gat Decor. And
great.
Before that, that was an interview with Nathaniel J. Hall and our Philip. And
yeah, that was an interesting listen, wasn't it?
That was, yeah, lots of issues raised there. And I remember somebody that wanted to I met a bug chaser, and this is pre-95, pre-triple disease, HIV.
Yeah.
That's our Channel 4 YouTube channel. Is where the documentary is, and we've got the second part of that interview coming up in a future show. So we've got some stories from around the world in the UK, haven't we, Josh? What have you got for us?
Yes, we've got, so could you say the email and stuff?
Oh, yes, our email. Yes, so we've got a new email address. It should be easier to have to remember. It's info@hivhour.org.uk. So we'd love hearing from you, and we always welcome suggestions for people to interview, and any news items you come across, or any community events you want to tell us about, yes, please let us know.
Yes.
info@hivhour.org.uk.
Fabulous. So we're going to do a bit of world news on stories. So I got this one. 6 years after pregnancy, almost half of women in HIV in Tanzania have dropped out of care.
Really?
Yeah. So long-term retention in HIV care is a challenge for vertical transmission prevention in African countries. Among pregnant women in with HIV who enrolled for vertical transmission prevention services in Tanzania, only 78% remained in the programme after the first year. By the sixth year, only 56% were receiving care. Yeah. It's interesting to know why. Yeah.
Any suggestions as to why that's happening?
Yeah, so according to the study, 50% of the women who discontinued in the first year did so after one visit and never returned.
Hmm.
Furthermore, treatment discontinuation was higher among younger women.
Mm.
By the end of the six-year follow-up period, only 36% of those under 20 were still receiving antiviral therapy care.
All right, all right.
In 2021, there was almost 2 million Tanzanians living with HIV,
really?
With 59% of them being women of reproductive age. So that's 15 to 49 years.
And we should note that vertical transmission is another name for mother-to-baby transmission.
Yeah, sorry, I should have said
that. No, it's just we know the terms, but somebody might not know. So there are more children living with HIV than there should be as a result of them not engaging in care and not taking the antiretrovirals, isn't it, through breastfeeding and breast milk.
Mothers who transmit HIV to their infants in the era of universal maternal ART represent a vulnerable population who require improved access to care and enhanced social and adherence support, said the researchers. To close these gaps, they recommend identifying and supporting mothers at risk and helping pregnant and postpartum.
Yeah, postpartum,
What does that mean?
After birth,
yes.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're here, David.
it's a medical term, as far as I understand, it's after you've parted with your baby, I guess.
It says it on the Tinder. Women achieve and maintain viral suppression as a matter of urgency.
Mm.
I think you're saying, why do people do it? It's, as you say, social stigma and
and cost of living as well. Cost of medication in certain countries obviously can be prohibitively expensive. If you've got, if you've got to buy formula milk, that obviously trumps. I hate to use that word, but that's more important than getting your baby fed than treating yourself for HIV from some people's point of view.
It's interesting, isn't it?
I hope the situation improves.
Yes.
Yeah.
You've got an amazing story.
Yeah, so this week there's been sort of two global sort of awareness days. June the 2nd, internationally, since 1975, has been International Sex Workers' Day, just June the 2nd. And that's an occasion to acknowledge the contribution of sex workers to society. And, a lot of people are quite prudish about that, and in lots of countries, sex work is illegal in one way or another. But UNAIDS, that's the sort of United Nations department that is combating AIDS across the globe, has identified key workers sex workers as a key population in society that is particularly vulnerable to HIV. And so there are five key populations that they mention, and I just assumed certain groups, but they are actually sex workers, men who have sex with men, so that doesn't necessarily mean just gay men, but it's any man who has sex with another man, intravenous drug users, trans people, and people in incarceration or prisoners. So that's not people with the most HIV. It's the people who are most vulnerable to catching HIV. So that's where my assumptions were sort of slightly skewed, I thought. But yeah, but it's worth mentioning that, you know, that because of the sort of criminalization and the legal status of sex work in society, And also, you know, just the criminalisation of homosexuality and things like that, that some of our key populations are particularly vulnerable to HIV. So the UNAIDS have actually proposed 6 global enabler targets for 2025, and that's to reduce, to have less country, 10% of countries to have laws, less than 10% of countries to have laws criminalising any aspect of sex work, less than 10% of sex workers experiencing stigma or discrimination, and less than 10% of health workers and law enforcement officers with negative attitudes towards sex workers. Mm. So there's a lot of, it goes on and on, there's lots of targets, but those global enabler targets would make life a lot easier and make people less vulnerable to catching HIV in the first place.
Yeah.
So that was June 2nd, and then only yesterday, Wednesday, June the 5th, was International HIV Long-Term Survivors Day.
Oh, wow, okay.
And funnily enough, I remember last year we interviewed a chap, Mark, I talked at length with him about sort of HIV long-term survivors, because it's recognised, and this is from The Lancet, that 50% of people living with HIV are over the age of 50, that sort of 50% accounts for 70% of all total deaths of people living with HIV. So obviously, you know, the treatment is so successful that we are living longer, but obviously as we are living longer, we are getting into old age and we're dying of old age, you know, but there are other things, but we still account for the majority of the deaths now, the people like you and me who are no longer spring chickens.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah. Well, So there is a website. I won't talk at length about this, but there is a website dedicated to HIV Long-Term Survivors Day. And if you've got your pens ready, listeners, it's an abbreviation. So it's hltsad.org. So that's a website, www.hltsad.org. That's stands for HIV Long Term Survivors Day. Anyway, so yeah, I encourage you to have a listen.
Yes.
A look at that.
So there's, I was going to say, this is something you brought up today. You saw it's Stigmavir.
Yes, Stigmavir. So there's a brand new drug in the ether. It's called Stigmavir, and it's been designed for healthcare professionals to take to help reduce the HIV stigma. Now, I must point out before everyone says, oh, I must get my doctor on that, that it's a completely fictitious drug.
Yes.
But it's been invented very, very cleverly by the Casey House Trust charity in Canada.
Wow, yeah.
And they've done a spoof advert to the music of I Will Survive, with doctors singing about how they, you know, in the past they've had stigma towards their patients, but with Stigmavir they can know, you know, their patients are now stigma free. And funny enough, the local charity Martin Fisher Foundation has done a lot of work within the Brighton hospitals, to ensure and do their best to make sure that the Brighton hospitals are HIV stigma free. So, we actually ripped the sound. So, we're all credits to the Casey House AIDS service provider in Toronto for producing this, and that credit goes to them.
So you can see the video as well, and that's but we're going to play just the audio, aren't we?
Yeah. So their website, if you're interested, is smashstigma.ca for Canada.
Right, shall we have a listen?
Yeah.
1 in 5 people living with HIV are denied healthcare because of stigma. Irrational fear of HIV from healthcare professionals could be contributing to depression, treatment avoidance, and negative healthcare outcomes. But there is a cure. Stigmavir, a once-a-day treatment proven to reduce mild to severe HIV stigma in healthcare professionals.
first I was afraid, I was petrified. I knew the science but was scared, I was shook inside. But then I took a pill, researched all night long, and I grew strong, and I learned how to carry on.
I'd stigmatize all the time. Looking back at my behavior, yet it should have been a crime.
I should have trusted science, grounded in reality. Instead, I broke the trust that my patients had in me.
Now, Sigmavir, it made things clear. I'm finally cured now. No more HIV fear.
Now I treat all my patients just the way I should.
Now I use my kindness.
Stigmavir, a pill a day keeps HIV stigma away and may result in improved quality of life for patients, deeper understanding, healthcare equality, and increased compassion. Ask yourself if Stigmavir is right for you.
Wow.
Well,
that was fun, wasn't it?
It was. I think it's good to see the video as well.
So yeah, if you see the video to it, it's a lot of fun because you can see the different, like, dentists and that, because, I mean, historically, dentists in this country have not had the best response to HIV. They're much, much better now.
Well, I think it's good to keep making awareness, and because it is still a factor, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It happens.
And I think to have a bit of humour with is good as well.
Humour is a great way to learn, much better than fear. I remember the Tombstone campaign.
Ugh, yes.
Dreadful. Still paying for that now.
Yeah. So I got Precious by Anil Lennox. I love that album, Diva. Do you remember?
Oh,
remember?
Yes.
Yeah. 97.2
FM. Radio Reverb. Oh, I'm singing about that. I used to love that album. It just takes me back to the 90s, obviously the 90s.
Yeah, Anil Lennox, fantastic singer.
Oh, yeah, she's brilliant.
And Eurythmics as well. Yeah. Oh, Sweet Dreams. Ooh.
So welcome back to the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM DAB Plus and RadioReverb.com.
Yes, don't forget we are
Line.
Sponsored as well by Jack Russell's Technology and funded by Brighton Rainbow Fund. So yes. Thank you both.
Yes, thank you so much. So another world story, actually. So this is pharma firm urged to share new game changer HIV drug.
Oh, really?
So more than 300... politicians, health experts and celebrities on Thursday called for US pharmaceutical giant Gilead to allow cheap generic versions of a promising new HIV drug to be produced so it can reach people in developing countries more affected by the deadly disease. The drug, now, apologise for this, listeners, when I say the word, lenacapravir, could be a real game changer in the fight against HIV, according to the open letter to Gilead. Lenacapravir, which was approved for use in the United States and European Union in 22, only needs to be injected twice a year.
Oh, it's an injectable.
So it's an injectable, making it particularly suited for people normally excluded from high-quality healthcare.
Yeah, wow.
The politicians and the celebrities, they urge Gilead to ensure that people in the global south living with or at risk of HIV can access the groundbreaking medicine at the same time as people in the global north.
Right.
Two-thirds of the 39 million people living with HIV were in Africa in 2022, according to the World Health Organization. Africa also accounted for 380,000 of the 630,000 AIDS-related deaths across the world that year. And because it only requires two shots, the new drug, a year, the drug could be particularly important to those who face stigma getting treated for HIV, including young women, LGBTQ people, sex workers, and people who inject drugs.
The key populations at UNAIDS. They're the most vulnerable. I mean, and remarkable. I mean, you know, if someone just had to have treatment twice a year, I mean, that's obviously a great goal for us in living in Europe. But for, you know, if you're living in a remote mountainside on the foothills of Mount Kilimanjaro, fantastic.
Yeah,
isn't
and
it?
You know, I was talking about I can mention it again, my bottom, I did the injectables, but unfortunately I had to come off them for other reasons. But this is where it's going now, isn't it? All these new developments.
Yeah.
Gilead said in a statement, "It is grateful for the advocacy of all those who share our enthusiasm for the potential of Lenacapravir." Pravir, as we await the results of our pivotal phase 3 clinical trials, which will start to read out, which will come later this year. They are in regular conversations with HIV advocates and partners. So that includes governments and people who work.
Well, it's good that they're talking about it. I mean, you know, big pharmacy, you know, it gets a bad rap sometimes, but let's just forget that they save lives. You know,
yeah, absolutely. And they said, last thing, they're in development to access, you know, and they're committed to accessing the model that ensures that, that this reaches as many people as possible.
That's good news. Good news.
So have you got any, we've gone into community news now, haven't we?
Yeah, community news. Yeah. Should we have a song now or just go straight to community news?
Just straight on.
Community news. Just a little thing, really. So there's a trip to Sheffield Park, which is a beautiful gardens and particularly beautiful in the autumn or fall when all the Acer trees, the Japanese sycamores, change their colours. But anyway, it's lovely in spring and summer as well. So on Thursday, the 4th of July, service users of the Sussex Beacon and Lunch Positive are going. And this has been a trip organised by the service users themselves. So if you'd like to go, it's not funded, so you have to pay for yourself. So it's admission is £15.20. People are car sharing. They're leaving from the Sussex Beacon. So a great opportunity to meet new people, make new friends. So Sussex Beacon users can contact Candy. I won't give her number over the airwaves, but if you know Candy and you're a Sussex Beacon service user, please contact her. And also contact Gary, Gary Pargeter at Lunch Positive, who most people that use Lunch Positive will know as well. So, so it is obviously a big formal garden. There are two mobility scooters will be available and booked for those who require them as well. So, car parking at the park is free and fuel costs will be shared by the people using the cars.
Yeah. So it's their 15th anniversary birthday. So
Lunch Positive, yes.
Shall we sing Happy Birthday? We can do a little...
Yeah, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Lunch Positive. Happy birthday to you. 15 years. That's congratulations, a great achievement. I remember going to the 10th birthday. I mean, they're just going from strength to strength, aren't they? And I think coming up soon, we'll be interviewing Jim Stanford, who's one of the sort of key workers there at Lunch Positive.
Yeah, because it's good. I mean, they have such a great amount of volunteers who do such a good work, don't they?
Yeah, it's not just lunches anymore, as we know. From previous visits, they do much, much more.
So leading on to that, there was an article in C Magazine about World AIDS Day concert raises £4,000 for
Lunch Positive. Oh, good.
So I'll just... Yeah, so the Brighton and Hove World AIDS Day concert, which was obviously last year, featured performances from Actually Gay Men's Chorus, Brighton Gay Men's Chorus, Quickly Rainbow Chorus. Oh, there's quite a few. And they announced it raised a smudge over 4,000.
Right, so, a smudge.
A smudge, yeah. That's what it's
right, all right.
Oh, no, it's a smidge. Smidge.
That smidge has a smudge. It obviously smudge. Was smudged and spelling mistake. Yeah,
no, it's a smidge. Well, I love that word, smidge.
It is, yeah.
Organisers of the annual event said the combined groups wish them, under the leadership of Gary Pargeter, many happy returns on their 15th birthday.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And that leads on to they're having a celebration at the Arcobaleno on the 15th of June, which is Saturday. So that's
in Kemp Town, isn't it?
Yes, that's going to be in Kemp Town. So that's celebrating their 15 years of
marvellous. Is that can anybody go to that? Is it ticketed? Is it because I think I remember seeing a poster somewhere in the last week.
I think
Arcobaleno have obviously Facebook group and website, so check that and just search Lunch Positive.
And they have Ophelia Payne, which must be a drug.
That's a good drug name, isn't it?
Ophelia Payne.
Yeah.
So yeah, congratulations to them. That's
yes.
If you want to go to their lunch tomorrow, so that's Friday at 12 till 2, and that's at the Dorset Gardens Methodist Church.
In Dorset Gardens.
In Dorset Gardens. Mm-hmm. So do go on there, and it's donations, isn't it? And you get a nice meal and a bit of chat.
Yeah, and a great way to meet new people, obviously living with HIV, and share network stories.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Mm. So we're coming to that. I just want to say that also, because this has been on the news quite a lot, the THT have been part of the World Chelsea Flower Show as well. So
that's the first time they've done it, isn't it, I believe?
So that's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
I don't know, have you ever been to Chelsea?
I've never. No, I did look at the price of tickets and thought, ooh, no, that's a lot for a garden show. But
Yeah.
But no, it's the garden show to go to. If it's run by the Royal Horticultural Society, isn't it? And I watch it on telly, and I avoid the crowds, but I don't get all the impact of
it. Do you have smelly vision?
Smells. I wish I could, because you could have all that floral stuff. Well, there's all sorts, isn't there? But, I mean, there are little gardens, and there are obviously big gardens organised by charities, usually on a theme. So do you know anything about the theme for this year?
So I'm going to say, yeah, the garden was designed by Matthew Childs and made possible by the project Giving Back. And it tells the story of the HIV epidemic in the UK starting in the 80s when an HIV diagnosis was very different, obviously.
Yes, yeah.
The Memorial Health... The memorable... I can't even say that.
I don't know. You can manage the long, complicated names of HIV drugs, but... Yeah, go on then.
Anyway, health campaign undoubtedly saved lives, but there's been huge progress in the fight against HIV since then. So almost 40 years later, the tombstone is being reclaimed by the HIV charity Terence Higgins Trust.
Oh, right.
It's part of its show garden, Bridge to 2030.
Oh, right.
At this year, so, yeah. And that's already opened. It opened on 21st of May. So do go along and see what it's like.
Mm.
The garden takes visitors on a journey from the fear of hopelessness of the 80s to living a long and healthy life with HIV.
Oh, right.
So,
literally saying it with flowers.
Yeah, I think that's...
The slogan goes. Yeah.
I think that's really good.
It is, yeah, it is. Lovely.
So, coming to the end of the show, David, so how...
Gone quickly, hasn't it? I mean, it's been a roller coaster of a show, hasn't it? I mean, some great songs, some really almost shocking opinions from the interview that Nathaniel did with his documentary on Channel 4 YouTube.
It's going to be interesting to see the second part, so that's going to be the next show. But we also have to mention, coming to the end, but we are... our new website's going to be up and running, but we're going to relaunch on the Stigma Day, aren't we?
Yes, so the Global Stigma Day on the 21st of July, where we're having a rebranding event to really just engage with you lovely listeners and tell you more about us, you know, off air. You know, we actually...
You need to know anymore.
Come and meet the presenters in person.
You might not want to do that.
Yeah. You can come and meet us in person and tell us your views.
Yes. Yeah. So, Nas, thank you for joining us.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
We carry on with our theme on 90s. This is one of your tracks, David.
Oh, is it? Lovely. Good. Yes.
I'll do it in the Northern accent. Pump up jam.
Pump up jam. Go on then. Technotronic.
Should we put a bit of pump up jam?
Yeah, go on. Cheerio.
Thank you for listening. And, we'll speak to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.